Meet Reed L. Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
You're sitting there at the kitchen table. Your head's in your hands. Your skull is slowly nodding back and forth. And you're wondering about how you're going to make that credit card payment. And your other half reaches over to you and puts his or her hand on your arm. He says, don't worry about it. Credit cards don't mean anything. And you look up and go, say what? What are you talking about? Listen. We each owe $1.1 million to the federal government. Doesn't that put it all in perspective? You think about it for a while and laugh and go, you're right. You are right. I think I'm going to go out for an additional credit line on my credit cards. The federal government can do it. I can do it. We have a shining example up there on the hill. You know, that little story is unfortunately true. In my last show, I talked about the staggering debt that every American owes because of the largesse of the folks that have been elected over the last 50 years and exponentially over the last 3 years. $14.4 trillion in primary national debt, you hear about it every day on the news, and then that $108 trillion Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security that they just don't like to talk about. You know, I'm watching the antics on TV, ready to throw my cowboy boot at the screen and break the fifth TV in a year. And everybody's wringing their hands, Republicans and the Democrats. Democrats, of course, don't want to cut at all. But we'll talk about that another time. Because it's on purpose. It's not just incompetence. And the Republicans, where is their spine? They talk about wanting to make cuts. And then every time the president blinks and says, or should I say, misstates the truth, we might not have enough money to pay Social Security on August 3rd. Nonsense. There's about $200 billion in revenues that will be coming in August and every other month, some months more than others. You know, the government does take in $2.4 trillion a year, and that's in the worst downturn we've had in 50 years. In some cases, in some respects, maybe the worst downturn we've had, period, and that includes the Great Depression. So if $2.4 trillion can't run the government of the United States, I would suggest that we need new people in that government. Maybe across the board, but certainly the tax and spend group, who, with very few exceptions, happen to be Democrats. But there's some Republicans in the mix, and there's a couple of Democrats who actually are fiscally responsible. You know, this recession's so bad that I just heard ExxonMobil laid off 25 congressmen. And the unions laid off 51 senators, and they've issued a pink slip warning to Obama. This recession is so bad, my neighbor got a pre-declined credit card in the mail. You know, we're laughing about these little jokes, but they're not jokes. There's lots and lots of people, tens of millions, struggling right now. The question is, why are we in this fix? What are we going to do to fix it? And who can we rely on to get that done? Those are huge questions. The answers, oh my, the answers are a bit discouraging. The only encouraging thing is that the American spirit, that is the spirit of you and I and everybody else in this country, well, not everybody, most other people in this country, will pull us through as it has before, but not without tough times in between here and then. Today we're going to talk about two or three subjects. I touched on some of them last week, and I want to expound on them. Because each one really requires, demands, and certainly deserves some in-depth attention. You know, that American spirit thing is huge. It's unique. It's a universal energy, or almost universal energy in this country. My multiple award-winning, number one best-selling novels, Threads West, an American Saga, is all about that. Yes, it's a story I wanted to tell, and that I really enjoy telling, that story of disparate threads of lives that weave into the tapestry of an emerging nation beginning in 1855, and then the six-book arc that catapults us over the course of that epic saga into the real-time contemporary West, how the land has acted as the anvil for personalities that have been forged throughout the last two centuries, and how it's determined in many ways, you know, our destiny as a nation, our resources, our love of land, our feeling for space, our rugged individualism, which unfortunately has dissipated to the extent that 50% of us now don't pay taxes. And 1% of us, and I wouldn't call them the luckiest few, but the folks with the most money, who in many cases busted their butts to get to where they're going, pay about 40% of all taxes. And the top 20% of us pay 95% of all the taxes. Let me ask you a question. Go back into your own life experience. How many times have you seen somebody who has no vested interest, who only gets rather than gives, be vested in something? I mean, you could think about situations right there in your household, on your neighborhood, in your community. Somebody who gets something for free thinks differently than somebody who works for it. That's just the human condition. So if you have 50% of the country who's not paying any taxes right now, and some of them, I reverse that, many of them are in some way, shape, or form on the government dole, food stamps, 99 weeks of unemployment. Boy, now there's an incentive to go out and get a job, 99 weeks. I mean, we're talking 2 years. How many of those people have an incentive to change anything? They're not working. They get a check. They may get multiple checks. They may get multiple benefits. They're all paid for by the other 50%. You know, one of the places that we can start in fixing this is the tax code. And you've heard people talk about this. In fact, they talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, and nothing ever happens. I mean, how hard is this? Number one, you have a flat tax. Yes, you can argue about the percentages relative to the income levels, and you can argue about where the breaks are in the income levels and all that stuff. Those are details. We need to get rid of the 16,000 pages of the tax code, which is fraught with special goodies for unions and special goodies for corporations and special goodies, in fact, for members of Congress and the administration. It needs to go away. Let's have a marshmallow roast. And it needs to be replaced with something really simple, like a couple hundred pages. Simplicity is nice. There's a lot less administration at the government level. That saves us money. There's a lot less administration at the corporate business and small business level. That saves us money, and people will have more money to hire others to spur employment. And guess what? We'll save $24 billion a year on the IRS. Now, that's a big savings. That ties right in with this whole deficit reduction, you know, debt elimination talk, I wouldn't call it a plan, that's going on in Washington. You know, there's, look, there is $2.4 trillion to spend every year under the current tax structure. Most experts, feel free to Google this up, Google up flat tax. There's many different studies on it, and you will find that though the numbers are different, and the percentages are different, and the revenue quotes are different, or projections, there's virtually no economist, and I mean virtually no economist, that does not absolutely agree that a flat tax will spur the economy, spur employment, simplify life, simplify business, reduce government, particularly in concert with a balanced budget amendment. So why can't we get this done? You know, in my flat tax world, one of the things, and I don't hear anybody talking about it, the Republicans kind of timidly talk about, well, we want to increase revenues, yes, but not through raising taxes. We want to increase revenues by broadening the tax base. You know, this is all doublespeak. I mean, is there anybody out there in the government or running for a position that can talk straight? Here's the bottom line. If you live in the United States of America, you need to write a check every year. It may only be $50. Your income may be, you know, $1,000 from odd jobs and $2,000 in food stamps, but you have an income. You walk these roads. You're protected by the army. You breathe the air. Is there something I'm missing here? I don't think so. You need to write a check for $50. Everybody needs to have skin in the game. That's my little amendment to the flat tax discussion. The skin in the game clause. Think about how much revenue we would raise. Everybody's always talking about, particularly the president, who loves class warfare for his own gain. You know, his gain is put ahead of you know, the sanctity of the American system, and certainly put ahead of the welfare of the country. And I can give you countless examples, and some of you are rolling your eyes, but it's true. And you can use his own words. You can use his own contradictory words. You can use his words versus his actions. But that's a discussion for another day, and we'll have those discussions. Right now, on the flat tax, if this could get enacted, most economists agree that the increase in revenues, which would come, number one, from bigger collections, not raising rates, but better collection. Number two, by spurring the economy, the private sector, what the country is based on, is, you know, it's like an engine with jet fuel. There's a reason that in the days of Ronald Reagan, even though the Democrats still poo-poo it, you know, the numbers don't lie, Ronald Reagan had big tax cuts going in. He was entering in a huge recession, most people don't talk about it, that was caused by Jimmy Carter's tax spend, bigger government, you know, nanny state mentality. You all remember Jimmy Carter, right? Do you remember when he got out of office? I mean, you didn't have a situation too dissimilar from today, although far less debt. When he got out of office, unemployment was 11%. The country was in a huge recession. There were millions and millions of people out of work, and everybody thought the best days of America were behind her. You know, when you have a 4-year term of a president, Mr. Carter, and the most exciting thing that happens in the whole term is that you win a hockey game when we beat the Russians in the 1980 Olympics, you know that that president had a problem. He couldn't even get helicopters from point A to point B. But I digress. When Reagan came in, he cut taxes across the board. Later, he raised them somewhat. But he spurred more than 25 million new jobs in 8 years. Think about that. 25 million jobs in 8 years. You know, Bush beat his chest because he created 2.5 million jobs over 8 years. Mr. Obama beats his chest because he says that he's created or saved jobs in the amount of 2.4 million over 3 years. The unemployment rate's gone from 7 to 9.2% and is climbing. And most economists figure that the real unemployment rate, feel free to Google this, unemployment rate, real unemployment rate, which is the underemployed and people who are discouraged and have given up work, that's over and above the 9.2%, is somewhere between 16 and 18%. And 2.5 million private sector jobs, Google it up, check it out. Private sector jobs under President Barack Obama. Just type it in. Millions of things out there, all third party, not pundits, study groups, think tanks. In fact, the government itself. The government reports itself. So we have examples of what works and what doesn't work. Why anybody would block those examples, why anybody would sit out there and be squirrely and mousy, I'm talking about you, Mitch McConnell, in your wording is beyond me. This country's way past that point. This is the time to get angry, to get things done, to talk plain English, and then once the talking's done, and that's an abbreviated time period, get something done. This is outrageous. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm angry. And everybody needs to have skin in the game. The Democrats talk about how raising the taxes on the millionaires and billionaires, that's a quote from our president, which he's used a number of times, Google it up, the millionaires and billionaires. But you know, if you look behind the scenes, they're saying if you make over $200,000 or $250,000 if you're a couple, you're a millionaire and billionaire and you need to pay more taxes. And in essence, what are you doing? You're paying more taxes so that the other 50% of the country is paying no taxes. Think about it. You take your dollar, you send it to the government, they take that same dollar and they distribute out most of it. This is most of it. 60% of our budget is entitlements. They distribute out 60 cents plus or minus on each dollar to somebody who doesn't pay taxes. Wow, I wonder why this whole deal isn't working. I'm scratching my head right now. What could possibly be the problem with that? Yeah, the skin in the game clause in the new Tax Reform Act is key. Because, you know, those folks who want to tax the millionaires and billionaires, which are people who make $200,000 a year, they say that's going to raise, wow, $400 billion to $1 trillion. They can't even agree. In new revenues over the next 5 to 10 years, they can't even agree on that. Now, let's get out our calculators. If we have 50% of the country, I think there's about 120 million, 130 million taxpayers. So that's 50% of the potential taxpayers in the country. I mean, obviously kids who are under, you know, 15 years of age aren't paying taxes, and folks with disabilities rightfully aren't paying taxes. They need help. We're not talking about disabilities. We're talking about people don't work. Big difference. I mean, you know, come on. If you can't walk, and you can't talk, and you're bedridden, and you're dying, that's a different ballgame. I'm talking about, you know, the healthy male or female in the 20 to 50 age, 50 years old age, and some older, who sit around, eat bonbons, and watch soap operas. or do other nefarious things, or take their welfare check and go down to the local department store and have a spending spree every week. That's the folks I'm talking about. You know who I'm talking about. And if any of you are listening, you know who I'm talking about. Stand up. Be American. Get some skin in the game. If there's 120 million people, let's take a nice round number out there who are not paying tax. And let's say they're all making, you know, $2,000 to $10,000 a year. I mean, below the poverty level, which is somewhere in the mid-20s. I mean, they're really not making much at all. And they all paid an average of $100 to the Treasury. You know, the folks under $5,000 pay $50 each. And the folks between $5,000 and $10,000 pay $100 each. And the folks between $10,000 and $15,000 pay $150 each a year. Do the math. What's 120 million times an average of $100? Where did that trillion go? How come nobody's talking about that $1 trillion in increasing revenues? Well, we all know why. Because it's politically motivated, and folks don't want to screw with that 120 million potential voters. They're willing to let the country go down the tubes instead. They're willing to keep those voters literally in a state of bondage because they become wards of the state. They're not doing these people any favor. Necessity is the mother of invention. That's been the story of this country. It didn't change from 300 years ago. It hasn't changed today. It is the human condition. So, if you want to increase revenues to get our primary $14.4 trillion debt, our $1.5 trillion per year annual budget deficit, and all those kind of facial things done, what do you got to do? You do have to increase revenues. The Democrats are right. But how they plan to go about it is wrong. You don't create less incentive, and there's growing disincentive in this country to go out and risk capital, invest money, put your butt on the line on a bank note if you can even get a loan after the Dodd-Frank so-called Financial Regulatory Reform Act. What a joke that is. I mean, these are the guys who brought down Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, and they're the guys who wrote the new regulations. Terrific. Terrific. Wow. And who chose them? But there's no incentive. They're sucking the incentive. They're sucking the oxygen of incentive out of the business tent of America. It has to stop. And it can stop with flat tax, and it can stop with the skin in the game clause in the flat tax. I'm going to give you some numbers here. Boy, your eyes are going to glaze over. This is not a joke. We had some ha-has at the beginning of the show, but if you want to check these numbers out for yourself, go to the website Unite in Action. Unite in Action. The website is actually UNITEIA-news at freedomdonations.com. And they have a lot of great sources in there, including government tables that you can kind of link back to. You'll love this. So, $1.347 trillion. You know what that number is? It's the amount the federal government has overspent so far. Let me underline those words. So far. We're only half into the year. In fiscal year 2011, that's the budget deficit so far for this year. $354 million per day. That's the amount every single day the federal government has to fund or is required to withhold for Social Security and Medicare. $354 million a day. Remember in the last show we talked about that $108 trillion Medicaid, Social Security, Medicare, and unfunded public employee pension liabilities in the last show? Well, this is a big chunk of it right here. Yeah. How about this? $1 million every 46 seconds. What do you think that is? That's the rate at which the national debt, which is now $14.4 trillion, this is what you hear about on TV, that's the rate at which the national debt grows every 46 seconds. $1 million every 46 seconds. Think about that. All you folks listening, you've dreamed of having $1 million. Or if you have $1 million, you've dreamed of having $10 million or whatever. You know, welcome to America. That's a good dream. Your government is increasing debt by that amount every 46 seconds. Yeah. Your lifetime of work is the government's largesse in terms of debt, not production, every 46 seconds. The amount of federal debt per taxpayer, $128,561. That doesn't include the unfunded liabilities, that $108 trillion out there that nobody wants to talk about. No, nope, that's the one that puts us over the $1 million each. Wow. And then, you know, we're talking about tax. So many of the Dems, a few of the Republicans, and certainly the president, since he loves class warfare that he thinks will get him votes, particularly from the 50% of the population that don't pay taxes. He wants to tax the rich. We talked about who the rich are in their minds. I mean, they say millionaires and billionaires, but if you read behind the lines, and you can Google this up, it's $200,000 a year or $250,000 for a couple. Some of the really generous Democrats say $300,000. Wow. Gee, thanks. $1.3 trillion. That's the total value of all cash and assets for the richest people in America. In other words, if you seized all their assets, it wouldn't even cover this year's deficit. Think about that. It wouldn't even cover this year's deficit. $4.6 trillion. That's the total value of all small business assets in the United States, which, of course, is exactly where tax increases in the $200,000 to $250,000 range would fall. And, of course, if somebody is paying taxes, they're certainly not paying you. They're certainly not hiring your neighbor. You see, you don't go to jail if you don't hire someone. But you can have a really ugly life if you just refuse to pay your taxes. So where do you think their money's going to go? The increase in taxes or giving you a raise or giving you a job? Let's think about this. $127 trillion. This is what this particular site figures the total national debt plus unfunded liabilities is. They're kind of on the high range. You know, I'm conservative, so I'm just using $108 trillion. $77 trillion, the total assets of every American household, small business, and corporation. And finally, you know those big bad boogeymen like Exxon and, well, not GE, because GE is the president's buddy and they get all sorts of special deals and they don't pay taxes. At least Exxon and the rest of the oil industry paid $1.2 trillion in taxes over the last decade. Google it up. Oil industry. Federal tax revenue. But the total assets of all these corporations, including little ones, big ones, huge ones, multinational ones, is $13.8 trillion. Do you know what? It's not enough to pay off our primary national debt, which is now at $14.4 trillion dollars. Wow. And we're going to look to the millionaires and billionaires to solve our problems? I don't think so. I think they're kind of tapped out. I think we've outspent them. I would love to see the study on exactly what that $100 average for people making under $10,000 a year, most of it government income given to them, would be in terms of revenues and reduction in both deficit and debt. In concert with the taxes, in concert with streamlining the tax rates, getting rid of this thousands of pages of pork barrel nonsense which benefits the left and the right and the special interests and the unions and the corporations. I mean, everybody has their hand in the till. There's nobody innocent in this game. Everybody has their hand in the till. The other thing we have to do is we have to stop spending. I mean, this is elementary. You know it. I know it. Most of us, including myself, have stopped spending on many different levels over the last several years. We think twice about every expenditure and walk away from half of them, even though we would surely like to do it or have it. Come on, let's put big boy pants on in Washington. If we can do it, you can do it. Because remember, you work for us, boys. You work for us up there. Yes, ladies and gentlemen of Congress and ladies and gentlemen in the administration, you are our employees. We've been telling you what to do for the last 3 years, now that we've kind of awoken from our self-indulgent slumber of the past 50, and you aren't listening. What do we have to do so you can hear us? Because you need to hear us. Or you need to be unemployed without your lifelong pensions that you folks voted yourself, and your 3% pay increases you voted for yourself, and your 15 to 25% increases in the last 2 years, mostly under the Democrats, although there are some Republican culprits in this too, that you voted yourself for your, you know, staff and office spending. Who are you guys? Give me a break. What, we got one set of rules for 350 million of us, and the other set of rules for the 465 members of the House, the 100 members of the Senate, and the 300 yahoos in the White House? Huh? That 1,000 people has a different set of rules than the other 350 million? I don't think so. That's not the way it was set up. Get with the program. Yes, I am starting to get to, you know, when I go over this stuff, I got to tell you, I start to foam at the mouth. Because this is common sense. This is 2 plus 2 equals 4. How difficult is this? The more vibrant your economy, the greater the revenues to the federal government. The more people who pay into the system, even if it's 50 bucks each, the more revenues to the system. The more money you take out of people's pockets through higher taxes, rather than a flat tax or reformed tax structure, the less money they have to do to grow their business and employ people. And employment's the engine of getting this economy humming. It's the engine of increased revenues to the government. It's the engine of decreasing deficit, the annual deficit. And it's the engine of decreasing debt. And that leaves us with, where do we cut in spending? You know, that's a discussion which I cannot cover in the time left in this show. But next week, we're going to talk about all the various places that we can cut spending. And boy, is there a raft of them. We're going to talk about some of the things that we've done, which are just unbelievable, incredible, nonsensical, make your eyes glaze, bad decisions, waste of money, pork barrel projects, feed the constituency, buy votes with our tax dollars, or get perks like directly for yourself. You know, like Michelle Obama going to Spain on vacation for the cost of $251,000 2 weeks ago. Do you know that there's been more than $2 billion, let me underline that, $2 billion spent in the last 3 years for trips for Michelle and the kids and for Barack? I mean, when he flies somewhere and tries to make it like a something, this is about America, this is about our problems, and it's really a campaign sideshow, I think we're all smart enough to kind of decipher that, whether it's Barack Obama or anybody else. You're paying for it. $2 billion. 3 years. Wow. You know, back in the first year, he took Michelle out to dinner in New York. One evening, one dinner. Flew two planes up there with two fighter jets. $351,000 for one dinner. This is the guy who's for the common man. Okay, sure. Gotcha. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal. The show is on the right side. We have lots of work to do, folks. You need to spend 10 minutes a week, educate yourself just a bit. Google this stuff up. It's out there. And you don't have to listen to pundits from the left or right, but you need to think with your eyes wide open. When these people talk, and I mean Republican or Democrat, and particularly the administration, you need to listen. You need to recall what they said last week, and you need to think about, even if it's just tidbits, what you've read about in the news or heard about in the news or seen in TV as to what they've actually done. I mean, the right hand talks and the left hand does something else. These incongruities, they need to start registering with you. So next week, we're going to talk about where we can cut spending. We're going to talk a little bit about education, because it's a huge drain on the American, state, and local pocketbooks, and we're all paying taxes for that, and we're not getting the results, and there is a way to do it. That's fair to teachers, great for students, and will really help with what we're spending. We're going to delve into that whole kind of quaking mass of nebulous pudding, which is kept opaque by our boys and girls up there in D.C., so that we, you know, the stupid we the people, who don't understand, according to David Plaus, who really don't care, according to Barack Obama, who get lost in the details, according to Eric Cantor. Yep. Well, those days are over. I don't know if they're over for you, but they're over for this buckaroo. So do some research on these matters. What you'll find will startle you. It'll make you angry. It'll get you involved. And more than anything, folks, no matter what the fixes are, no matter what side of the spectrum you're on, assuming you love this country, assuming you believe in the principles of the founders, the Constitution, and the American spirit and American dream, you need to get involved. It's up to us. They're not going to get it done. Have you figured this out? It's not going to happen. Think with your eyes wide open. We'll see you next week. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side. Thanks for joining me today.
For more information about Reed and his work, please click on the globe in front of you on the webtalkradio.net page. You can also click on his book, Land for Love and Money, and his new best-selling historical western series, Threads West, an American Saga. Watch for the second volume of the saga, Maps of Fate, coming soon. And, of course, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archives to catch up. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed L. Rosenthal on the Right Side.